Chapter 9. The house of Vinicius was indeed decked in the green of myrtle and ivy, which had been hung on the walls and over the doors. The columns were wreathed with grapevine. In the atrium, which was closed above by a purple woolen cloth as protection from the night cold, it was as clear as in daylight. 8 and 12 flamed lamps were burning. These were like vessels, trees, animals, birds, or statues, holding cups filled with perfumed olive oil, lamps of alabaster, marble, or gilded Corinthian bronze, not so wonderful as that famed candlestick used by Nero, and taken from the temple of Apollo, but beautiful and made by famous masters. Some of the lights were shaded by Alexandrian glass, or transparent stuffs from the Indus, of red, blue, yellow, or violet color, so that the whole atrium was filled with many colored rays. Everywhere was given out the odor of nard, to which Vinicius had grown used, and which he had learned to love in the Orient. The depths of the house, in which the forms of male and female slaves were mobbed, gleamed also with light. In the triclinium a table was laid for 4 persons. At the feast were to sit, besides Vinicius and Lygia, Petronius, and Chrysothemis. Vimcius had followed in everything the words of Petronius, who advised him not to go for Lygia, but to send Atacinus with the permission obtained from Caesar, to receive her himself in the house, receive her with friendliness, and even with marks of honor. "Thou wert drunk yesterday," said he, "I saw thee. Thou didst act with her like a quarryman from the Alban hills. Be not over-insistent, and remember that one should drink good wine slowly. Know too that it is sweet to desire, but sweeter to be desired." Chrysothemis had her own and a somewhat different opinion on this point, but Petronius, calling her his vestal and his dove, began to explain the difference which must exist between a trained charioteer of the circus and the youth who sits on the quadriga for the first time. Then, turning to Vinicius, he continued, "In her confidence, make her joyful, be magnanimous. I have no wish to see a gloomy feast. Swear to her, by Hades even, that thou wilt return her to Pomponia, and it will be thy affair that tomorrow she prefers to stay with thee." Then pointing to Chrysothemis, he added, "For 5 years I have acted thus more or less with this timid dove, and I cannot complain of her harshness." Chrysothemis struck him with her fan of peacock feathers, and said, "But I did not resist, thou satyr. Out of consideration for my predecessor, but wert thou not at my feet? Yes, to put rings on thy toes." Chrysothemis looked involuntarily at her feet, on the toes of which diamonds were really glittering, and she and Petronius began to laugh. But Vinicius did not give ear to their bantering. His heart was beating unquietly under the robes of a Syrian priest, in which he had arrayed himself to receive Lygia. "They must have left the palace," said he, as if in a monologue. "They must," answered Petronius. Meanwhile I may mention the predictions of Apollonius of Tyana, or that history of Rufinus which I have not finished, I do not remember why. But Vinicius cared no more for Apollonius of Tyana than for the history of Rufinus. His mind was with Lygia, and though he felt that it was more appropriate to receive her at home than to go in the role of a myrmidon to the palace, he was sorry at moments that he had not gone, for the single reason that he might have seen her sooner, and sat near her in the dark, in the double litter. Meanwhile slaves brought in a tripod ornamented with ram's heads, bronze dishes with coals, on which they sprinkled bits of myrrh and nard. "Now they are turning toward the Carinx," said Vinicius, again. "He cannot wait. He will run to meet the litter, and is likely to miss them," exclaimed Chrysothemis. Vinicius smiled without thinking, and said, "On the contrary, I will wait." But he distended his nostrils and panted, seeing which, Petronius shrugged his shoulders, and said, "Here is not in him a philosopher to the value of one sesterium, and I shall never make a man of that son of Mars. They are now in the Carinae." In fact, they were turning toward the Carum. The slaves called Lampadarii were in front, others called pedisequia, were on both sides of the litter. Atacinus was right behind, overseeing the advance. But they moved slowly. Four lamps showed the way badly in a place not lighted at all. The streets near the palace were empty. Here and there only some man moved forward with a lantern, but farther on the place was uncommonly crowded. From almost every alley people were pushing out in threes and fours, all without lamps, all in dark mantles. Some walked on with the procession, mingling with the slaves. Others in greater numbers came from the opposite direction. Some staggered as if drunk. At moments the advance grew so difficult that the lampadarii cried, "Give way to the noble tribune, Marcus Vinicius." Lygia saw those dark crowds through the curtains which were pushed aside, and trembled with emotion. She was carried away at one moment by hope, at another by fear. "That is he. That is Ursus and the Christians. Now it will happen quickly," said she, with trembling lips. Oh, Christ, aid! Oh, Christ, save!" Atacinus himself, who at first did not notice the uncommon animation of the street, began at last to be alarmed. There was something strange in this. The lampadarii had to cry oftener and oftener, "Give way to the litter of the noble tribune." From the sides, unknown people crowded up to the litter, so much that Atacinus commanded the slaves to repulse them with clubs. Suddenly a cry was heard in front of the procession. In one instant all the lights were extinguished. Around the litter came a rush, an uproar, a struggle. Atacinus saw that this was simply an attack, and when he saw it he was frightened. It was known to all that Caesar with a crowd of attendants made attacks frequently for amusement in the Suburra and in other parts of the city. It was known that even at times he brought out of these night adventures black and blue spots. But Woso defended himself, went to his death, even if a senator. The House of the Guards, whose duty it was to watch over the city, was not very far, but during such attacks the guards feigned to be deaf and blind. Meanwhile there was an uproar around the litter. People struck, struggled, threw, and trampled one another. The thought flashed on Atacinus, to save Lygia and himself, above all, and leave the rest to their fate. So, drawing her out of the litter, he took her in his arms, and strove to escape in the darkness. But Lygia called, "Ursus! Ursus!" She was dressed in white, hence it was easy to see her. Atacinus, with his other arm, which was free, was throwing his own mantle over her hastily, when terrible claws seized his neck, and on his head a gigantic, crushing mass fell like a stone. He dropped in one instant, as an ox fell by the back of an axe before the altar of Jove. The slaves for the greater part were either lying on the ground, or had saved themselves, by scattering in the thick darkness, around the turns of the walls. On the spot remained only the litter, broken in the onset. Ursus bore away Lygia to the Suburra. His comrades followed him, dispersing gradually along the way. The slaves assembled before the house of Vinicius, and took counsel. They had not courage to enter. After a short deliberation they returned to the place of conflict, where they found a few corpses, and among them Atacinus. He was quivering yet. But, after a moment of more violent convulsion, he stretched and was motionless. They took him then, and, returning, stopped before the gate a second time, but they must declare to their lord what had happened. "Let Cub declare it," whispered some voices. "Blood is flowing from his face as from ours, and the master loves him. It is safer for Gulo than for others." Gulo, a German, an old slave, who had nursed Vinicius, and was inherited by him from his mother, the sister of Petronius, said, "I will tell him, but do ye all come. Do not let his anger fall on my head alone." Vinicius was growing thoroughly impatient. Petronius and Chrysothemis were laughing, but he walked with quick step up and down the atrium. "They ought to be here. They ought to be here." He wished to go out to meet the litter, but Petronius and Chrysothemis detained him. Steps were heard suddenly in the entrance. The slaves rushed into the atrium in a crowd, and, halting quickly at the wall, raised their hands, and began to repeat with groaning, "Ah! Ah!" Vinicius sprang toward them. "Where is Lygia?" cried he, with a terrible and changed voice. "Ah!" Then Gulo pushed forward with his bloody face, and exclaimed, in haste and pitifully, "See our blood, Lord! We fought! See our blood! See our blood!" But he had not finished, when Vinicius seized a bronze lamp, and with one blow shattered the skull of the slave. Then, seizing his own head with both hands, he drove his fingers into his hair, repeating hoarsely, "E miserum, me miserum." His face became blue, his eyes turned in his head, foam came out on his lips. "Whips!" roared he at last, with an unearthly voice. "Lord! Ah! Take pity!" groaned the slaves. Petronius stood up with an expression of disgust on his face. "Come, cry! Doxothemus!" said he. "If 'tis thy wish to look on raw flesh, I will give command to open a butcher's stall on the Carina Tilda." And he walked out of the atrium. But through the whole house, ornamented in the green of ivy and prepared for a feast, were heard, from moment to moment, groans and the whistling of whips, which lasted almost till morning. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.